Grab your bat microphone, it's time to start the show. Like a court of owls, the mist.
Welcome to the Bat Pod. My name is Bill Beer, and tonight it's Holy Back Issues Batman. And as always on Holy Back Issue Batman, we talk about Batman back issues. Any issue that Batman has been in that's a back issue, we're going to talk about. And I always have a guest, and tonight's guest is from Chris and Reggie's Cosmic Treadmill and DC Comics Weird Science, Reggie. How's it going, Reggie?
Yeah, I'm doing very well, Bill. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm great. Very excited to talk about some back issues. And I wanted to ask you, since you're on here, you're a fellow podcaster. How did you get into podcasting?
Well, you know, as you know, I started on the Weird Science DC Comics podcast. Gosh, I guess that would be almost going on to 4 years ago now, in August of 2015 or something like that. Yeah, I was on that for a while, and one day they had an event in DC. They brought back Bloodlines, and we had Chris on. And then from there, Jim actually suggested that the two of us should go do our own podcast, and we did, and that was 3 years ago, and that's what I've been doing ever since. We do Chris and Reggie's Cosmic Treadmill every week.
Awesome, yes. It's a great podcast. I've been listening for a little while now, and I don't know, when did you start that cast? A couple years ago, you say?
That would have been almost, but to be honest, if you remember, it was a segment on the Weird Science.
Yes, it was a segment.
DC at first, and we've tried to keep it to about 15, 20 minutes, but as we kept going, it started getting longer and longer until there was one that was like over an hour long, and that's when we decided we should probably splinter off and do our own thing.
Right.
We started that somewhere around, I forget exactly, May or June, about 3 years ago, something like that. So it's coming up on our three-year anniversary of doing it at all. And then I think it was August of that year that we split off, something like that.
Yeah.
I don't have the exact dates.
Very cool. Very cool. So tell everybody, how did you get into comic books? What's your first memory of the first book you picked up?
Now that, you know, that's actually a question that we also ask on the Cosmic Treadmill, because it's, I think that's something comic fans really love to know. It shows where you come from and your whole overview of what comics are. And I think it says a lot about me that the first comic books or first comics I ever saw were in bound books in collections.
Oh, okay.
My father had, he's a fan of comics from childhood, and stuff like the Smithsonian comic strip collection and the comic book collection. I used to read those lovingly as a kid, and the Jules Pfeiffer one, the great comic book superheroes he had, and a handful of other ones that I read those obsessively, but those are really give you an overview of comics sometimes from like the turn of the 20th century up until the 70s. So going into it, I had this kind of academic overview look at it, you know.
Yeah.
And then when I eventually started getting comics, I was, I don't forget, 7 or 8 or something like that. I was always getting the weird ones. I was like, I would like go to the comic shop and I'd want to get Little Lulu and old Mad magazines because I'd read about these things in these history books. So that's really where I come from. I don't come from like an X-Men, Batman type background. Although I do love those characters and I have a real love for those comics. I really come from like a kind of a arm's length deal going on there.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. There's the superheroes got me into the game, but you know, there's always room for those comics, that type of stuff and everything. So, were you like, what was your first experience as far as Batman goes?
Oh goodness, I mean, if I had to guess, I would probably have to say Super Friends. Although you know what, it probably was. It might have been in that Jules Pfeiffer book, which has the first Batman story from Detective Comics 27 reprinted in it. And I remember that last, it's close to the last panel where he says a fitting ending for his kind. He knocks that guy off the railing into the chemical. Do you know the first Batman story?
Yes. Yeah.
Off it? Yeah. So that, I mean, that's a, people talk about that panel, but I remember being a little kid and really aping that. So that might have actually been the first time, but if not, it was Super Friends cartoons. And then for comics, I wish I could remember the first one, but it would have definitely been the Jim Aparo, Marshall Rogers, that era, the kind of early 80s, early to mid 80s
Same for me. Mine was right around that time. And,
yeah.
And I grew up Super Friends through the 70s, so that's how I knew all my DC comics before I actually read comics, is watching the Super Friends, Challenge of the Super Friends, and that sort of thing. When I asked you to come on here, I said, pick a book, any back issue that has Batman in it. I didn't care what the title was, as long as it was a back issue and it had Batman in it. Tell us what you picked.
I picked World's Finest Comics, number 94, from June 1958, cover date. This is, of course, is Batman and Superman and Robin featuring in one adventure together, which to me makes it a much better value.
Oh, yeah.
Dollar wise.
Oh, yeah.
You know, dollars and cents wise. This would have been a 10 cent comic, I would guess. Yeah, it's definitely, you want to get your dime's worth. So, you know, I loved, sorry, World's Finest, even going up onto close to the new 52. And then when they did that thing with the Huntress and Power Girl, I was very interested, but it never went anywhere. But this is a series I've actually, when I really think about it, I've loved for a long, long time. But this particular time, the Silver Age, is the goofiest, so.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to say we usually do creators on here, but this book has, like, a ton of creators.
Yeah, overall, gosh, this particular one, because the actual issue has several stories in it. For a long time,
yeah.
World's Finest would have until 1947 or 8 or something like that, it was Batman and Superman had separate stories. They never featured together. They featured eventually much later on, and then it became a shared thing. But they would have a ton of different things, a ton of different stories, as you know in here. But if I had to guess, this is a Dick Sprang story on the inside?
Yeah, I think so.
Drawn and written, I really couldn't guess. It really could be any of these guys. But I'm going to say Dick Sprang drew it. Cover looks like it might be Kurt Swan, but it looks like it might have also been. I assume you're reading the digital copy also.
Yes,
the easiest way to go about it. Yeah, this looks like it's been lightboxed, so I couldn't guarantee anything. But
no.
I do think the inside is Dick Sprang.
Yeah,
we have, of course, the reason I picked this, or one of the reasons, is this is the origin of the Superman Batman team, but it's actually told in, you know, reflection. It's told in flashbacks in a sense. So it's a very clever bit of storytelling and a good chance to see a lot of Batman, Superman, Robin trappings without having to drag them out in order to fight, you know, a baddie or something. They can just reminisce on old adventures.
Right.
So I mean, we could do this a couple of ways, Bill. We could probably sum this up in a sentence. Or we could take a minute to go through it.
Yeah, we can take a minute and go through it.
So what happens is Bruce Wayne and Dick Grayson are watching the, I mean, look at Dick Grayson's spit curls right there. That's just pure, that's Dick Sprang all over. So they're watching the news. They found out that Luther has escaped from prison. They, of course, figure they got to go give Superman a hand. They even pop up an improvised bat signal. Like, how narcissistic do you have to, could you pop up a, what about a Superman signal? How about that? Wouldn't that do something?
They have the bat signal right on the car. Like a spotlight.
They're ready at any moment to be like, here we are. We are the dynamic duo. This also is one of my, I don't love this Batmobile, but I do love the idea of the scoop nose bat face on the front. I just, it's like ridiculous to them.
Yeah, it's pretty ridiculous. And that little back fin.
The fin is like, why? But, you know, that fin would sort of pop up later in Joel Schumacher movies, and you know that it sort of never goes away. These things never die.
Nope.
Superman shows up holding another superhero who has a cowled face. He's dressed in orange and yellow. He's got kind of a lightning bolt in a circle on his chest, and his name is Power Man. Superman shows up, and he's like, "It's not necessary. I got Power Man," and Power Man don't like interlopers, you know what I mean? He doesn't like new people.
Yeah, he doesn't. You know? He doesn't. Superman's his friend. Stay away.
It's like, that's it. It's me and Supes. He's like, Superman and I can handle this job by ourselves. And it's like, wow, he's just like a jerk right off the bat. Batman sort of mollified by this, and Robin even looks a little downcast. And they decide they're going to kind of like sneak. They're going to do a sneak behind and, you know, see what the two Superman and Power Man are up to. And while they do that, they reminisce on the first time that they met. And that's when we do a little flashback. The panels get a little cloudy.
Yeah.
And we find out that Superman, that, you know, they were loving on Superman. They couldn't get enough of him. They were doing their biz. And then they decide they got to go to Metropolis so that it doesn't mess up Superman. They go after helicopter holding a armored truck in their bat plane.
Yeah, I'm sure that would work, you know.
The
helicopter with his little claw, you know, like the claw machines that you put like a dollar in.
Exactly. Yeah. That would work fine. Just grab it. And luckily the guys driving the truck, they fall right out. It's just like a very neatly done operation. Frankly, if you've got the military helicopter, how badly do you need what's in the armored?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
That's what I'm wondering. You seem like a pretty, but that's the order of the day for the Silver Age. When Superman flies up to the helicopter, he gets zapped with liquid kryptonite, which makes him plummet to the crowded streets. And he even mentions Superman, he'll be fine, but he might hurt somebody, which I think is interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And why don't they use the liquid kryptonite anymore? Seriously, this is like a great idea.
Frankly, it pretty much makes you unstoppable. If you can just spray liquid kryptonite around, you know,
right,
make a circle around yourself, pretty much Superman can't do anything about it. But yeah, you don't see too much of it ever again. Although it does take it takes powderized forms and other weird forms over the years. Power Man, so they wash this kryptonite juice off of him. Power Man is seen making repairs to this is even a side thing that just happens where Superman finds out that there's gas leaking from a building, so he rips the building off its foundation so the gas will disperse, and Power Man rushes in to twist a valve and tighten it up and stop the gas. So they realize that he's powerful, but clearly he can't fly, he can't do that kind of thing.
And when you say that Superman rips the building off the foundation,
yeah,
it's like a toy building that you pick up. You know,
I believe in Gotham and Metropolis that they're made to like double reinforce all their buildings so that you can just kind of pick them up the ground like Legos, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't have any moving furniture. Everything has to be bolted down just in case Superman feels like tearing your house off its foundations,
right,
for the fun of it. And then they continue reflecting on this wonderful first adventure they had with Superman. They are trying to find where the guys in the helicopter went, find out they're stashing themselves in a windmill, which, of course, are very common throughout middle America. Isn't that right? Wouldn't you say
common, but the one thing that isn't common is the way they landed this helicopter.
That's pretty wild. So in order to do that, they had to land it tail first. I would like to know how that happened,
yeah,
frankly. I want to
yeah.
hear that story more than the how they hid the helicopter, but they made it work.
Where they fly it in sideways, you know?
Exactly. I mean, I don't know. I mean, actually, knowing Silver Age comics, they probably flew in through a concealed barn miles away and then went through a tunnel that shot them up.
Right.
That's usually how things happen, especially in Batman, as you know, he's got like his entrances and exits all over the place in the Silver Age and in his Batcave. So it was probably some kind of mechanism like that. And this is where we learned the key to the entire story, that when they reminisce on it, Superman didn't want them to charge the house, but that's when we find out that they have more than kryptonite guns, they have regular plain old machine guns. So Batman does something, oh God, Bill, something's about to happen that might make me die laughing, but Batman does something he does quite often, and that is dolls himself up to look like Superman, right? He's a master of disguise.
Yeah, he's got the bat makeup kit.
He's ready, exactly. He's ready to go. And this is all before, you know, Bill Dozier's show. So you really do see how on point that show was in terms of mocking the comic of the time. But, so, you know, they go back to the present, and Power Man is still being a jerk. I'm all the help Superman needs. He literally just says, I agree with Power Man, you must leave. It's like, damn, Superman, cold. Cold, baby. And when they think back to the first adventure, Bruce Wayne remembers walking in dressed as Superman. They blast him with kryptonite, and it doesn't work on him. And that's the edge he needs to, you know, get the guns out of their hands and save the day. And then, Bill, when he takes the Superman makeup off, he already has the cowl on.
Yes.
That is my favorite thing.
He put the makeup over the cow.
It's the very idea of it, and the fact that he has the bat ears only makes you ask more questions. But even beyond that, even assuming that he could cover that, like, why would you do it like that? It doesn't make any sense, but I love him for it. And you see this in old comics quite a lot, and I love it every time I see it. And, yeah, then he's like, oh, that's right. Now this reminds me why Superman is acting this way, because he cares about us. They go back to Metropolis Prison. He finds out there's silicon left on the wall that Luther blasted out of, and therefore he can't affect that element, which is a pretty big scientific jump to make, but that's fine. So Batman and Robin save the day with some silicon shields. They grab the kryptonite. Turns out Power Man was a robot with a tape recorder inside. Ta-da!
There.
Simple. Very simple. The story, the clues were all there, Bill.
Yeah.
The clues were all there. I don't know why you couldn't see it.
I don't know. I didn't see it until the very end.
You were like, what the? What the hoosits?
But my favorite part in this whole thing.
Right.
You know, Superman gets doused with the liquid kryptonite. And what else to do is throw Superman out by a rope.
Right.
You know, and douse him into the local waterfall.
What are you, he's getting hazed for a fraternity
to,
right there.
Yeah, to wash him off.
It's like, you just run a shower on the fella. You know, you don't need to subject him to humiliation.
Right.
You know what I mean? Just because he's Superman and he can take it doesn't mean you have to...
Yeah.
You know, drag him in, literally drag him in a waterfall. I mean, that could be considered torture. I think that does probably go against the Geneva Convention, if I had to guess. That's beyond waterboarding right there.
Absolutely. Yeah, but this was a very entertaining comic, I do have to say.
So you have learned now how they first got together, their very first adventure. Isn't that exciting?
It's exciting.
I don't think this has ever been retconned.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
Oh,
you
boy.
You know, when I was reading this at times, in my head, I hear Batman's voice from Super Friends in this comic. Just
I can see that.
Corny it is sometimes.
Yeah.
How the dialogue is similar.
This is for sure not, you know, stern, gritty-voiced Batman, but there's no question about it. He is... absolutely, if he's not Adam West, then he would be the one from whatchamahoosits, Super Friends.
Yep.
So that is there it is. That's my offering to the show. I hope everyone was reading along,
absolutely,
and enjoying it.
If you weren't, why weren't you? Seriously,
you should have been. And I got to tell you that, you know, coming out of that and thinking about and going into your pick, they're not far off in some ways. I got to say,
no.
This one's a little goofy too.
Just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so my book I picked was Batman number 21, and your writer is Len Wein. Your artist is Walt Simonson and Dick Giordano. Your colorist is Glynis Wein. Letterer, Ben Oda, and your editor was Paul Levitz.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing I tell you about this book when I first picked it up is the cover. Because
yeah.
I would originally go in the comic shop. You didn't have pull lists or anything like that. You just scan the covers, see what you wanted to pick up, and that's what you picked up. At least for me.
This is definitely my favorite and the most striking of Batman logos. But you know what would have called out to me, believe it or not, is the corner banner. Cordially inviting
oh, yeah.
us to the Joker's birthday, and Joker being rendered in the logo. Would have made me feel like this was something, you know, better than your average Batman comic. Yeah.
Right. And they're basically on Joker's birthday cake as candles. It's Batman, Robin, Commissioner Gordon, and Alfred.
Mm-hmm.
And of course you have the Joker there. And I love the word balloons that they used to have on the covers.
Oh, yes. You always get me with that. This is also for sure... what we can call the superpowers Joker, the massive chinned late 70s
oh,
Joker,
yeah,
that
yeah.
guy that once he was rendered for the toys in the early 80s, this became his look pretty much until Crisis, or I guess until the Killing Joke or whatever.
Yeah, he looked like that. His face almost looked like a triangle. Mm-hmm. Almost.
Yeah. Impossible, really, but, yeah. You know, awesome nonetheless.
Yeah, that pointy chin. So, yeah, as we jump into this book, we're at the Gotham City Police Station. Mm-hmm. You know, Commissioner Gordon comes in. They say, hey, we got a letter for you. It's an invite to the Joker's birthday party. And he has this, I guess it's like a fedora. Fedoras mm-hmm. were popular during this time.
Yeah, well, for cops always, you know, it's a Dick Tracy style.
Yeah. And he's like, this is ridiculous. At that point, all the officers start falling over, laughing. Joker comes in, announces that he's here. You know, he does his normal, you know, during that time, how the Joker would be loud. He's got his ridiculous costume on with his purple fedora.
The whole thing, yeah.
And the best part, he arrives in his Joker car.
Yep. Superpowers was in charge at the time.
Yeah. They helped gotta sway. Make those cars and toys.
Oh, yeah.
And Batman arrives. He swings in. He didn't arrive on the Batmobile. He just swings in and he notices that they're using laughing gas. So he puts in his little breathing device and he crashes through the window. The Joker exclaims that, what a waste of a perfectly good window. Could you have used the door?
He has a point. You know, really, why not?
Yeah. Like, it does make sense, you know? Or come in the back, you know?
What, are you not going to kick butt if you're coming through the door? You know you're going to do. You're going to kick butt regardless. Right. Just why break a window over it?
And as he's fighting the Joker's thugs, the Joker actually escapes. He escapes with Commissioner Gordon. It looks like he knocked him out or whatever.
Yeah.
Batman finds out that Robin has also been kidnapped.
Which is weird that he had no idea, frankly, but...
Right, yeah.
All right, fine.
I mean, it's the time, but they should have had some sort of communication devices of some sort.
You would think there would be something, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, they had a bat computer, so...
If you're not, if you know, if one of us is not cold and our heartbeats reach this rhythm or whatever, then, you know, I'll get an alert on my glove or some nonsense. I also got to point out, it is hilarious to me that Joker is driving a vehicle that is essentially his face. And it's like, he's driving away and it's like he's sitting behind the wheel of his face and it's...
Like, nobody will notice that going down the road and...
I know, that's the other, very discreet... You know, very low-key for a criminal, you know, somehow he gets it all done. So anyway, it's very funny.
Robin, they show how Robin gets taken. He helps a damsel in distress who has a flat tire, and he goes to touch the tire. And what's on the tire? Super sticky taffy, of course.
Mm-mm.
The old super sticky taffy.
Yep. She should have been prepared for that, Robin. Come on, you gotta have some kind of solvent on your gloves.
Yeah, and of course he takes off his mask and reveals the Joker, the damsel in distress.
And again, like we pointed out, his skull is impossible. Like, he can't just put a mask on and become a woman. He has a face that it doesn't make any sense.
Right. Yeah. No. He had to have some padding in there or something. Well, his chin protrude so far down.
Makes no sense.
Yeah. We switch over. We're at the Wayne Foundation building. And at that time, the cave wasn't being used, and they were in...
Mm-hmm.
Their little setup was in the Wayne Foundation building. And you see Selina Kyle. And, you know, during this time, they would have stories. It would be like a soap opera, especially with these women.
Yeah.
It would jump through the stories of who he was dating, and at one time he had all these women, Nocturna, and I don't know who else, Selena.
Yeah, Silver St. Cloud.
Yeah.
You know, Vicki Vale actually happened during this time, like in the very late 70s, very early 80s, and he dated Selena too.
Alfred's daughter.
Yep.
I remember Alfred's daughter and Vicki Vale were like friends or whatever, which is kind of odd.
It didn't stay that way though.
No. So, yeah, and then we get Lucius Fox coming in. And as he comes in, there's a big crash.
A kaboom!
Yep. And, of course, it's Joker coming in. They had some kind of dynamite that just blew a hole in the wall, but it doesn't look like it injured anybody seriously. And he sees Selina, and he recognizes her as Catwoman. And he actually gives her roses.
Nice.
Yeah. But these roses has a boxing glove in the roses.
That old gag.
Yeah. Yeah.
The old boxing glove in the bouquet.
Yes. Well, this is like the Joker I remember from, like, you know, when I was growing up that would do this sort of
thing. Yeah. And the thing is, he still is very menacing to me, you know. But the things he does just aren't, like, so ridiculously dark.
You know? Yeah.
A little levity to things.
Right. And you see he's got everybody tied up. It's even, yep. I guess, everybody. He's seeking vengeance on his birthday, and he has Commissioner Gordon, Alfred, I don't know who the other guy is offhand.
Pennyworth. Oh, you got it, Rob. Yeah, yeah. Who's this guy?
I don't have any idea.
Yeah, some guy.
And when we get to the other, there's more people in there, but I guess it's just everybody that crossed him.
Yeah.
The one lesson to learn is when you're in Joker's gang, if he laughs, you should laugh too.
Yes.
You shouldn't just not be paying attention or doing something else, because apparently Sidney forgot to laugh.
<Mm-mm.
laughs> That's a no-no. So the Joker takes out his gun, and it's the old bang your dead flag flying out of the gun.
Yeah, there you go.
But what's even better is it shoots. The flag is a harpoon.
Yep. Right into his head.
Yeah.
Now, this scene is all I remember, frankly, from reading it as a kid. But this did make an impression on me. The idea of this, I thought, was obviously very cool, because it's the old 1-2 switcheroo, we call that. You know, that's quite a gag to play on someone.
It's pretty cool. I remember this, too. I remember this, and then everybody being on the birthday cake.
The cake, I remember, too, yeah, which was weird. All right.
Yeah. Joker wants to have all these people that he seeks vengeance on to murder them in front of an audience. So he sets up the Harley Quinn Bakery Show.
Mm-hmm.
And he's offering free samples. So he gets a crowd full of people.
Big crowd going to show up for that
crowd.
One, yeah.
He does hit him with some gas.
Well, it says it makes them very, it doesn't do anything, but it makes them all very anxious. I think it might be there to freak him out.
Whatever gas that is.
Right.
Joker shows up, he reveals, it's his birthday party, and he reveals the cake with all the candles.
His face on it also.
Yeah, his face is on it, yep. He's very arrogant, you know, this Joker.
Yeah.
He must look in the mirror a lot.
He's a good-looking dude, I guess, if you like that.
He's got his greatest enemies there. I mean, he's got all kinds of people. I don't even know who we already named. I don't even know who any of the other people are, but whoever's crossed him.
Yeah.
And he's got this button that will light the candles, and then they will kind of blow up, I guess.
Sure.
But of course, if you're Batman, you've thought ahead. And Batman comes in and says, I'm not going to let you cremate all these captives. And the Joker's like, well, if you surrender, I'll let them go. And he says, okay, Joker, I believe you. And he ties Batman up to the candle.
Without untying the other guys. And he has a special candle for him at the very top, too. It's like,
yeah, special candle. What he didn't know, well, we don't know at this point, but Batman hits this secret, the old secret button on the candle.
Yeah.
The old secret switch that sends the candle like a rocket up in the air. And Joker's like, you saved yourself, but then he goes and hits the button to incinerate everybody else. But apparently, I was thinking, how in the world is there a button there? That doesn't make any sense. And how would Batman... But then when you get to the next page, he came in early to rig the button so he could escape.
Right, so I have to stop this for one second.
Yeah.
All right, so now when we entered the story, Batman saw Commissioner Gordon get kidnapped and learned that Robin was already kidnapped, right? So somewhere off-site, they were holding Robin and, you know, whoever else, but we know at least that much. So we could say maybe at that point, Batman would have known to go find a cake and rig the top candle to turn it into a rocket. But how could he? Where were they holding Robin? That's the question. You know what I mean? Like this is not a piker. This is not like they're holding Alfred. They got Robin. You better get that guy locked down quick, fast. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if he's not on the cake, where is he? That's my question. That's the real mystery behind this story, Bill.
That happened between the panels, I guess, you know?
Yeah, something happened between the panels.
Between the panels.
So Batman came to this cake with nobody on it, and he was like, well, soon this will have everyone I love and know on it. Let me rig one candle to become a rocket.
Yeah, and like, hopefully I'll get placed on that candle.
You know, that's like, if you know that, then why don't you go rescue the people?
Right. Yeah. So everybody's about to be incinerated. He throws the old batarang, a few batarangs, and severs, you know, the wick of the candle before the fireworks go off and they escape.
Really, really cutting it close, too, by the way.
Yeah, cutting it pretty close. It looks like mere seconds away.
Yep.
And he goes on the chase for the Joker on a boat, and they're heading towards a big old rock. And Batman's trying to save the Joker, and the Joker just gives him the old fake hand trick.
Yep.
It's the old phony hand up the sleeve gag. And then the boat hits the rock, it blows up, Joker's dead, never be seen again.
Yep.
Never to be seen again. The end.
Well, you know. Not quite, but No. This is a great ending to me, too. You know what I mean? This is fine. You know,
yeah.
I don't know why, you know, these nowadays you get these overwrought, endless, you know what I mean, meandering soliloquies. It's like, just throw the sucker against a rock and then, you know.
There you go.
Have him come back another day.
Yep. Don't know if he's dead or alive, but yeah. Now, as I heard the voice of, you know, Super Friends in the book that you had, for this one, it was the Batman 66. I could hear... You know,
it was a little more Adam West. Yeah. I can't do his voice.
Especially when you get the death traps.
I can see that, yeah.
The death traps really reminded me of, like, Batman 66.
I would say that there's a lot of truth to that, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, this was one of my favorites growing up. I could read it over and over. I hadn't read it in a little while, but, yeah, this was a good one.
I'd forgotten about it. I definitely read this as an issue. As a kid, that's why I think it must be 85. Mm-hmm. That's really 84. Maybe that was like my time really reading it and getting passionate about it. But I do think it's been reprinted in some things over the years. But who knows?
It's a good possibility.
There are so many Batman collections that are in and out of print. I couldn't begin to tell you. But
right.
I'd be curious. I gotta say, this digital edition is not looking great.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to go back to the printed comic
or
one of the collections and see, because Walt Simonson is no slouch. Dick Giordano's a great inker, and there's nothing really belying that in this issue that much. You know, it doesn't look awful by any means, but this isn't one of the spectacular, you know, efforts, I think. But who knows? This also might have just had to have been cranked out for some reason.
Right, it's a good possibility.
We don't know.
There's a lot of things going on behind the scenes in those days, so you don't know.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. In fact, the fact that Walt Simonson shares an art credit with Dick Giordano, not a inker credit, mm-hmm. might be part of the story. But anyway.
And the one note I wanted to make is, during this time, whenever Joker came into an issue, it was like special. It felt special.
Yeah.
He wasn't around all the time. He wasn't, it seems like nowadays he's somewhere, everywhere.
He's always somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
He might not be in Batman, but he'll be somewhere else.
Right,
yeah.
Justice League or whatever it is. I did enjoy seeing him when he would pop up.
I agree. Part of it, I think a lot of those guys found Joker to be too outlandish and sort of too much of a you know, trump card to play when you can just... You know, you can have the Penguin is somebody you can just have him kind of fooling around with that guy for a long time, whereas with the Joker, it's always the life of Gotham is at stake, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like the stakes were often higher. He was going to poison and kill everybody, and even though he rarely really ever did it back in the long ago, there was still always that major threat, whereas at least the Riddler was just trying to rob a bank.
Yeah.
So you could do that.
So yeah, that was... There are two books, pretty exciting, pretty cool to jump into these again.
I had a great time.
Tend to talk about that book a lot. I brought it up quite a few times on a regular show.
Oh, really?
Shows. Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome.
For whatever reason, because I think it was past episodes that we were doing favorite covers.
Right.
And that was one of mine, just simply, it might not have been the best cover ever made, but it was one that I personally liked.
It's super striking. It is. Yeah. I would I'd put it up there in the pantheon of, I mean, there are a lot of
incredible
covers.
Well, I mean, it was
covers.
Hard. We did top three, but it's hard to just pick three.
There are
dozens and dozens and dozens. So
yes.
So yeah, I really appreciate you coming on.
Well, thank you for having me, Bill. I had a great time.
No problem. And can, you want to give your info if anybody wants to check your show out?
Yeah, we have new episodes of Chris and Reggie's Cosmic Treadmill every Sunday. You can check us out on chrisandreggie.com.
Okay. Thanks again.
Thank you, Bill. I'll talk to you later.
If you'd like to contact the show, we are betpodpodcast@gmail.com. On Twitter, we're @podbat. And until next time, same bat time, same bat channel. We will see you later.